Investment Partners v. Windsor Securities, case number 21-506. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is David Dobin from the law firm of Cohn & Wolf in Bridgeport, Connecticut. On behalf of Windsor Securities, MFI Associates, and PPSP Trust Investment, we are asking the Court to reverse the District Court's dismissal of securities fraud claims in Counts 2 and 3 of the Second Amended Counterclaim and the District Court's judgment on Count 4 after trial on the claim against Mr. Chapin and Ivanhoe Associates for breach of contract, which is a breach of a guarantee.
Can I ask you a little bit about jurisdiction here?
Yes.
So you rely on diversity jurisdiction?
I believe we've relied on...
Or federal question jurisdiction.
I believe it was relied on both federal... both federal because it was a federal securities claim and diversity, but I would have to double check.
But on diversity jurisdiction, as I understand that, I just want to make sure. Ivanhoe Investments is what's the relationship between the appellants and the appellees here?
Ivanhoe, the relationship was that they entered into contracts. So Windsor Securities and MFI Limited Profit Plan became limited partners in Ivanhoe.
Of Ivanhoe, correct?
Of Ivanhoe Investment Partners, yes. And, yes, of Investmenthoe. Of Ivanhoe Investment Partners.
And Ivanhoe Investment Partners is a citizen of all the states where its partners are citizens.
Hmm.
So how is there a diversity jurisdiction?
The issue hasn't come up. I think.
So you're relying on federal.
I'm relying on
question jurisdiction and supplemental jurisdiction over the state law claims. There's a federal claim and a state law claim.
There was a federal claim. The federal claim
and
was
they're both
dismissed.
Based on the same actions, the right. same
yes.
transactions.
The so federal it, claim was dismissed.
Not diversity jurisdiction.
But it does not appear that it would have been based on diversity jurisdiction. I believe that it started off as a claim by Ivanhoe, and that may have been a state law claim. I haven't looked at the diversity or the jurisdictional question.
I think I now understand that you're not relying.
We're relying as part of the counterclaim is reinstating the federal securities fraud claim.
Fair
which
right.
would then establish that would establish
so
federal
why don't we
jurisdiction.
Get to scienter and falsity issues.
Right. So the bottom line is that the allegations of the Second Amended counterclaim are that at the time and prior to MFI and Windsor paying $2 million to become limited partners in Ivanhoe Investment Partners, there were representations made to MFI and Windsor by Mr. Chapin that there was an escrow account that was set up that was maintained at PNC Bank that it would not be raided, it would not be invaded, and it would be and it was secure from any type of theft. And I can go through all of the allegations in our Second Amended counterclaim, but the gravamen of our problem with the district court's opinion is that the district court adopted Ivanhoe's position that at the time those statements about the safety of the escrow account were made, they were not true. They were not true because the theft occurred afterwards, and the safety of the escrow accounts had not been compromise as of the time the representations were made.
I thought the district court's argument, and you are saying something different, so I want to focus in on this. I thought the district court believed that the representations were, here's the deal that I want you to invest in. This is what the plan is. The plan is to create this super secure escrow account, and therefore your money will be safe. But at the time that representation was made, I think the district court said that there was not yet any such account, and there was no representation that there was at that moment such an account. And I think you were just saying, no, that's not so.
Right.
That the allegation in the complaint is of a present existence of your money is going into this already extant escrow account, and this is what its characteristics are.
Right. And I would direct the court to, so paragraph 17 of the second amended counterclaim incorporates the private placement memorandum, which is exhibit D to the second amended counterclaim, so the paragraph incorporates the private placement memorandum. The private placement memorandum is on page.
What paragraph?
That is paragraph 17. The private placement memorandum says escrow account, and if you go to page 8, appendix 119, the escrow account is maintained at PNC. And then exhibit D, the same private placement memorandum, paragraph, page A112, that's appendix 112, which is page 10 of the private placement memorandum, says the partnership's money is invested in an escrow account at PNC Bank. When you go to paragraph 21 of the second amended counterclaim, it says pursuant to the offering materials, an account was set up. So what the district court did incorrectly was to construe the allegations about what Mr. Chapin said about what the safety of the future deposit will be to mean that the account hadn't been set up and that the escrow agreements had not been set up and this was just a plan. That's not true. This was this partnership that was set up in 2007, which is 2 years earlier. The private placement memorandum was dated in 2007, which says partnership's money is invested in an escrow account at PNC Bank. The forward, for lack of a better term, the forward-looking statements that are attributed to Mr. Chapin are, if you give us your money, it's going to be safe because we have these in place. So yes, the language of the counterclaim does couch the representations in terms of the future safety of the money, but of course that's how any inducement to get somebody to invest money will be phrased in future. We want you to invest money. The plan is for you to invest money into what's already existing, and at the time, Mr. Chapin and Ivanhoe had essentially guaranteed a risk-free, no risk of failure. The money's not going to come out of the escrow accounts. And at that time, Mr. Chapin had done nothing, and he knew he had done nothing, to actually ascertain whether any of his promises about the safety of the escrow account were accurate or not.
I've had trouble understanding the representation about money not coming out of the escrow account. Wasn't the representation, and I think it doesn't hurt your position, I'm just trying to understand what it is. It wasn't the representation the money will not come out of the escrow account without your permission. Because otherwise I'm not understanding what he's getting out of this, because presumably a lawyer's escrow account is not the best interest rate or best return you can get on your money.
Right.
Try to say something, and then you can tell me if I'm wrong in my understanding. Wasn't the deal that for now the money is just going to sit in the escrow account because we're going to use the presence of that money to show that we're a legitimate company with a lot of money to invest, and that'll help us get further financing to do our transactions. But then that money is not going to come out of the account except when you approve a particular financial transaction that you're going to participate in.
Yes.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, and only...
So it's not that it would never come out. It's that it will only come out with your permission when we will present you with specific transaction-by-transaction possibilities for things, and you'll decide whether it's secure enough for you to want your money to be part of it.
Right, and it was together with the representation that Mr. Chapin himself had exclusive control over what would happen with that money. Mm-hmm. Whereas at the time, even though it was a Regulation D offering, even though where he was supposed to be... making investigation into who was in control of these assets, despite him saying, I'm going to be the only one who has control, the private placement memorandum saying that he had exclusive control of this escrow account. There were actually other people involved who were not disclosed to my clients, and Mr. Chapin had not done even a cursory investigation to determine.
Why is it negligence? Because on the scienter side.
Yeah.
Why is this just what you're describing, negligence as opposed to a form of, you know, high level of recklessness, for example, or intentional conduct?
Because Mr. Chapin sold this as a no-risk proposition, and that's the difference. The difference is Mr. Chapin says, no risk of failure, the money's not coming out of the escrow account. As far as MFI and Windsor are concerned, when they're depositing these $2 million, they're putting it into a lockbox.
That relates to the question on the scienter.
So the reason why is that if somebody is saying that there's no risk, and where Mr. Chapin says there's no risk, and at the same time doesn't take any steps at all, and therefore ignores the obvious risks, which would make it clear that the no risk proposition is false, that rises to the level of recklessness.
You said the obvious risk. What are you talking about?
The obvious risk is that he did not. The obvious risk is that if he had conducted a cursory investigation, he would have known that he would not have control over the escrow account and that someone else did. When he says, "I have control of this escrow account," even though he knows that he has not even made any determination as to whether he actually has control of this escrow account, and he says there's no risk, it's one thing, that establishes a reckless disregard for the obvious
that they're secure, but that there's no risk.
There's no risk of failure. And I think that's what makes it outright, you know, we've cited a couple of cases in the brief where you have a heightened duty to investigate. As somebody making a representation.
I'm going to give you just a minute on the breach of contract, unless there are other questions about security.
The one question I had, because I worry about this no risk thing, because that sounds to me like a red flag all in its own right when you tell somebody there's no risk. But anyway, you had a much less conclusory thing that you said, and I want to make sure that you mean it. But you said that Mr. Chapin represented that he had complete control over the escrow account.
The private placement memorandum says the general partner has full exclusive and complete discretion in the management and control of the business.
Well, who's the general partner? Or what is the
general partner? I believe the general partner was Ivanhoe, Ivanhoe entity.
Is that Mr. Chapin is the sole person who has authority to act for Ivanhoe? Not Mr. Klott had no role in that? You see, if he says, I am the one who controls this escrow account, then it seems to me that if you say that without even taking the trouble to look at the escrow account that somebody else set up to make sure that you actually are the one with total control, that seems to go beyond negligence. That's not just I didn't do my due diligence here. This is I am making a representation that I have no reason at all to believe is true. But now you seem to be retreating from the idea that Chapin personally represented that he was the person who could the only person who could let the money out.
He made the person in charge of the general partner was the person who made the representation that he has the control over the asset.
Okay, where is that alleged?
That
Or is that another thing that's incorporated by reference?
I believe that that's incorporated into the amended counterclaim. And also, I would also refer to paragraph
2.
Again, it's incorporated into the complaint. Okay. Thank you.
Do
you reserve some time for rebuttal? We'll hear from Mr. Russell.
Good morning. I'm Philip Russell. I represent the appellees, Ivanhoe Partners, Ivanhoe Associates, and Jeffrey Chapin. We believe that Judge Thompson rendered his verdict against Ivanhoe on the specific language of the guarantee, and he specifically made findings as to the extent of that guarantee. We lost this case, and Chapin lost his own money as well. So
This is all about is the personal liability of Chapin.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not the liability of the
Correct.
Entity. I'm guessing that the only reason that that's worth the plaintiff's while here, or the counterclaim plaintiff's while, is that he didn't get full satisfaction from Ivanhoe.
Correct.
Right.
100%. So we argued that it was a supervening cause, and that we should be free of our contractual obligations as well as our. We argued that it was not even negligent because of what happened. Judge Thompson found for my adversary on the guarantee specifically being improvidently, in hindsight, mm-hmm. unconditional. It was a very broad guarantee. But it was only a guarantee of trades and a guarantee of conduct by Ivanhoe. So that was why the court rendered the verdict that it did against the party that it did. But that is a standalone. I think the rest of it, I can answer any questions that the court has.
I don't know that we've got questions. Thank you very much. Mr. Russell?
Thank you.
I learned one thing when I was in your position, which is when there are no questions, don't look for questions.
Have a seat. I'm just turning a little. Okay. I didn't want to turn too quickly and be disrespectful. Thank you.
Mr. Steven?
Because the only issue that was addressed was the guarantee issue, I would like to point out that the purpose of that joint venture agreement was for all the principal to never go out of the escrow account as part of that joint venture agreement.
That's what I asked you before. I mean, I thought the whole point of the joint venture was to make investments in distressed properties and flip them and make money. And somehow or other, you're going to have to buy the distressed properties, right?
So if you, in paragraph, I believe it's in paragraph 13 of the second amended counterclaim, the second to last sentence. No money will be moved by the escrow agent unless there's a simultaneous within the hour or two with no risk of failure of NRCC's purchase and sale. So the escrow amounts would only go out only if we already have a buyer, we already have a seller, so the money's gonna come back in.
But that's only gonna happen when there is a transaction.
Yes, that would only happen when there's a transaction.
But there never were any transactions because Mr. Klotz stole all the money before anything else happened.
That's right. There were no transactions. So with respect to the guarantee, Right. With respect to the guarantee, that actually, that was different. So in the joint venture agreement, if you looked to the joint venture agreement itself, in the pair, in the, in that joint venture agreement, it says in the background that it, there actually, it was not in, expected that you, that the money would leave escrow, because why would you, if you have a buyer and a seller, then you have the money coming in simultaneously. So the money would never need to leave escrow, and the money is only being used to establish the bona fides. So all of the principal that was put into that, into the escrow account was intended to be used for trades. And so our position with respect to the guarantee is that a, that the guarantee does not just cover principal when a trade occurs. If that's what the guarantee said, that the guarantee meant, that's what the guarantee language would have said. It said if the principal is used for a trade, it doesn't use the word use. It's in, it says principal for each trade. And every dollar that went into the escrow accounts was to be used for principals for trades. It was, that's what its purpose was.
So suppose your position is if the bank failed where the escrow account was maintained and everybody lost a significant part of their principal, that Mr. Chapin guaranteed that he would pay, repay Mr. Prusky for the losses. I mean, is that the point?
Yes, that is the point.
Anything that happened.
Yes.
There was no risk of any kind that anyone could foresee.
Yes, and that's confirmed by Mr. Chapin's own testimony where, and in emails where he says we stand behind principal and profit, and he admitted on the stand that he would, he was guaranteeing all of the principal, not just principals that are used in a trade. And the second sentence of that guarantee language itself also makes clear that when, you know, it, that Ivanhoe and Chapin, right, in the event of an adverse event, Chapin may look to errors and omissions or other policies or other participants, but they still agree they're liable to PPSP for the principal, regardless of success in securing payment. So under the scenario where the bank fails and...
Isn't that second sentence just about something else? It says, if first there's a sentence that we're guaranteeing the principal for each trade. Then the next sentence says, oh, by the way, Ivanhoe and Chapin may have sources that they can look to for reimbursement if something goes bad. But you have to pay us irrespective of that. And we don't have to wait until you get your insurance proceeds.
Yeah.
But why doesn't that just refer back to the first sentence? That doesn't add anything to the substance of the guarantee that's not in the first sentence. That's not a sentence that says, we guarantee your principal for each trade, and we also guarantee you against any adverse event that could possibly occur. The adverse event is something going wrong with the trades. That's what, because this sentence is not expanding the guarantee. It's just making clear that any Chapin has to pay for the losses that are covered by the first sentence immediately, regardless of whether he's trying to get funds or may have coverage from insurance and other sources to get that money back.
Right.
Isn't that what the second sentence is about?
They're
liable for to PS. The PPSP for the principal, regardless of their success in securing payment from anybody else, even if they can't get any anything
right.
out of insurance policies held by Century Title, et cetera, et cetera,
right.
they still are liable to Prusky.
Yes, they're still liable to Prusky.
Still, they're liable for what is guaranteed in the first sentence. It doesn't. The second sentence is not expanding the content of the guarantee. It's just addressing this possible argument that we don't have to pay until and unless we get our money back from insurance companies and the like.
So my response to that is that I believe the term principal for each trade refers to all of the principal.
All the principal. That's the principal argument that you're relying on.
Yeah, and that the second sentence says regardless of whether, if they're, you know, regardless of, in any given trade, regardless of whether Ivaho and Chapin can get money from another source
right.
to get that
there's,
money,
there's still no.
There's, you know, they're still liable to PPSB for the
right.
principal.
Right. Okay. I understand
your argument. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll reserve a decision. That concludes.